The boat of the sun rode high, casting its rays on the water. The boats of Egypt rode a swift wind, sails of purple and gold stretched taut on the limber masts, oars shipped and sailors praising the gods who saw fit to ease their labors. The queen's ship sailed in the center of its guard of lesser vessels. Here, away from the land, a month's leisurely sail from Alexandria, its splendor was veiled. Its decks were covered over with matting of reeds from the Nile, its crew in plain kilts or in nothing at all. Its passengers idled where there was room, or leaned over the rails to watch the foaming of the wake, or else to give tribute to the gods of the sea. Dione, who was never seasick, spared a moment's pity for the exquisite young courtier who was trying to vomit his victuals into the water. Since he had long since cast up anything he could have eaten for the past handful of days, he had nothing more to offer the sea gods, and they were as displeased as one might expect. "There now," said a friend of his with the callousness of the hail for the wretchedly sick. "That'll pay for you going ashore at Cyprus. Only way to cure the seasickness is to stay at sea. Stay aboard for a month or two this time, and you'll actually want to live again." The sufferer might have murdered him, but lacked the strength. His tormentor went off laughing. Dione stayed to hold the boy's head, a favor he did not appreciate. She did not trouble to tell him that she was working a small magic on him. Not much, not enough to defy the sea gods, but it got him off the rail and into the cabin he shared with the rest of the eunuchs. It would put him to sleep eventually, and when he woke, if the gods were kind, they would be at anchor at Tarsus. "We'll raise the mouth of Cydnus in the morning," said Timoleon, dropping, it seemed, from the sky. He was as naked as a newt and brown all over, and clean only by virtue of his having fallen recently from the masthead into the sea. There were new calluses on his hands, and blisters half-healed on his feet. He was gloriously happy. "And then it's up, Cydnus, and anchor at Tarsus, and show the bloody Romans what Egypt thinks of them." "You won't be showing them your nut-brown backside," Dione said. "It will be decently covered and facing away from them, and you will be remembering that you are a gentleman and not a sailor's pup." He looked mutinous, but he had had the lecture on mutiny. Dione had heard it. She had not known that the queen's oarsman could be so eloquent. "Yes, mother," he said, which was also a consequence of his sojourn with the sailors. They were in awe of her. Unlike Apollonius, they knew the goddess and believed wholeheartedly in magic. She was only glad that someone had found a way to civilize her son. Maybe, she thought, she should leave him with the sailors. He would leap at the chance. But whatever his father might think, she had some small sense of responsibility to her rank and station. Timoleon might grow up to command ships, but he would never be simply an oarsman in one. "Is Cleopatra seasick?" he asked her, having taken a bare moment to be sulky. "The queen is never seasick," she said. "She's in the cabin keeping Caesarion company." "Caesarion is as sick as a dog," said Timoleon. "He's a Roman, even if he's only half. Romans want to rule the world, but they don't understand the sea at all. It's a curse, Gyges says." Gyges was one of his friends, the enormous Nubian with the copper ring in his ear. Dione had half dreaded to find a ring like it in Timoleon's own ear, but so far he had foregone that tribute. "Gyges says Romans hate the sea, and the sea hates them right back. That's why they want us to give them ships. They know we aren't sea-cursed." "And how do you know that it's ships they want?" Dione inquired. "Oh, everybody knows that," said Timoleon. Everybody probably did. It was Dione's firm conviction that the people knew what their princes wanted before the princes were even aware that they wanted anything. The people lacked magic in themselves, but in their aggregate, they had more real power than a temple full of priests and seers. She drew a long breath of air that smelled of salt and sun and the sea. The rail was warm under her hands, its gliding protected beneath the wrapping of mats, the woven reeds both prickly and smooth. They remembered the Nile, the great slow river that was the lifeblood of Egypt and the wellspring of its magic. While she traveled the sea on this ship out of Egypt, she was part of it still. It was not as it had been in Rome, that cold, alien place, even with queen and goddess to be her strength. Here was still Egypt. Here she was strong, with the sun in her eyes and the wind in her hair. She drew up magic out of the deck beneath her feet, cedar from the Lebanon, but matted with reeds and full of Egypt, and gave it wings and sent it up like a prayer into the sun. When she remembered Earth again, Timoleon's eyes were round. "I never saw you do that before. Will you do it again?"
"No," said Dione.
She snared him before he could escape and sent him cabinward. "Now, in with you. Sailor's pup or no, you'll have your hour of Greek, and no mutiny." Since that was just what he had been contemplating, it silenced him conclusively. But then he liked the tutor whom he was sharing with Caesarion, who, though a eunuch, had, the sailors whispered, borne arms in Caesar's wars. That was enough to keep Timoleon in hand, even if Rodin would not confirm or deny the rumor. In fact, it was true, but Rodin was modest and a scholar. He was not proud to have found fighting so congenial. Timoleon went to his hour of Euripides. Dione stayed in the sun while it lasted, and when it went down, went reluctantly to wait on the queen.